Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, hello and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. And let me ask you a question. Did any dead relatives show up this year at your family Christmas celebration? And if not, do you expect a departed parent or grandparent to drop in for New Year's? Well, my first guest today, Louisa Oakley Green, tells us that when families gather over a holiday for a family reunion, whatever, loved ones who have passed away often pay a visit as well. And she's here to share stories of real people who have experienced otherworldly visitors and glimpses into the other side. And she's also here to discuss scientific studies relating to consciousness and out-of-body experiences. And please don't dismiss Louisa as far out. She's a science journalist who unwittingly married into a psychic family, so she has the unique perspective on the paranormal. And Louisa Oakley Green was a scribe for several decades. Her former career included newspaper reporter, health magazine editor, and medical writer, and finally an executive creative director of a digital advertising agency. And she's a graduate of the University of South Carolina School of Journalism and has also studied biology, biochemistry, anatomy in support of her medical writing. She currently earns her living as a freelance writer, and she's written two books in the Psychic Bystander series. Her latest, released in paperback and Kindle just this September, is Sightseeing in the Undiscovered Country, Tales Retold by a Psychic Bystander. I love that title. And hello, Louisa, and welcome from all of us who are alive and also perhaps from a few departed loved ones who are listening in.
Well, hi. It's so nice to be here.
Well, let's begin from the beginning. What one occurrence or series of occurrences caused you to convert from a skeptical science journalist to an author of books about psychic phenomena?
Well, I actually didn't believe very much in psychic phenomena when I was growing up. I was raised in an environment where that was thought of as superstition. It was simply not something for the 20th century.
Yeah.
I was growing up in the 20th century.
Yeah.
And I think that the universe has a sense of humor because I was probably one of the hardest skeptics you could have met. And so who do I meet and fall in love with but a man who is psychic and comes from a family of psychics. Now, that's not his main feature as a person. He doesn't do it for a living. No one in his family does. They all have regular jobs, but they just happen to have this ability. And initially, I didn't take it very seriously, but something happened about 5 years after we were married at my father's funeral that definitely made me feel like I had to at least give a little bit of respect to the possibility that there might be another side, you know, that there might be things going on. It's a little bit of a story. Basically, I was helping my mother make the arrangements for my father's funeral.
Yeah, not a pleasant task, obviously.
No, and usually when you're doing something like that, you're not thinking very clearly. So I called the minister from the church we went to when I was growing up, not realizing as an adult that this man had retired many years before. He was now in his 80s. And when I called his home, his wife was thrilled that somebody remembered him, and she sent him on down. He hadn't officiated anything in quite a while. So I'm at the wake, and the minister says, "I'd appreciate it if everyone would sit down. I'd like to say a few words." So I sat between my mother and my husband, and the minister began to speak, and we realized very quickly that he had lost his sense of focus, and his conversation was just a little bit random, but he was such a nice old gentleman that everyone sat respectfully and listened to him politely. And after about 15 minutes of this, my husband leaned over and said, I see your father standing next to the minister. His arms are crossed. He's tapping his foot. He looks very impatient. Now, that in itself would not impress me. It was what happened a week later that made me think, wow. That day, we didn't have a chance to talk to anyone, not even relatives, because we were greeting so many people.
Yeah.
And about a week later, my brother-in-law called and said, Louisa, I didn't want to say anything the day of the funeral, but while the minister was talking, I saw your father standing next to him. His arms were crossed, he was tapping his foot, and he looked very impatient.
Oh, wow.
Now, that blew me away, because these are two people who hadn't spoken to each other, but saw exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And that was the point at which I began to say, okay, I obviously have a bad attitude. I need to at least entertain the possibility that there's something going on here, because I can't explain this.
Yeah, no, just having an open mind can open your vista and your viewpoint so greatly if you are willing to let something like that resonate with what's going on. Well, normally when a departed loved one returns for a holiday gathering, do all the attendees tend to witness the return, or does the loved one appear only to one or two individuals? I guess your father appeared to two individuals at the funeral.
At the funeral, yeah. Normally, you know, one person sees something. For instance,
I see.
My brother-in-law had a surprise 40th birthday party.
Oh.
And he walked in the room, and of course we all jumped up and said, surprise!
Yeah.
And he looked back, and he saw his mother standing in the back of the room.
Oh,
and then somebody tapped him on the shoulder, he looked the other way, and then she was gone. Well, his mother had died about 6 years before.
So
he was really happy that she came.
Yeah, of course.
And I do believe I've got hundreds of stories in my two books.
Yeah.
And I interview everyday people, and some of these people have had only one experience in their life, and some of them have experiences, you know, every week.
Yeah.
But one of the things I'm convinced of from all the people I've interviewed and all the things I've read is that when people who love us pass, they do not go away. They may cross to the other side, but they look in on you.
No, I'm convinced of that also, because we've had... you know, our daughter passed away in the end of 2006 when her plane crashed, and we've had several visits from her, I think, over the years, but almost not quite in the way that you're talking about. But in general, why do departed loved ones return for the holidays? Is it simply because they miss us, or more often are they seeking to send us a message? Or is, I suppose
I,
there's
I
some
think
of both.
When they are coming for the holidays, you know, if you're not seeing them, it's because they simply are interested in, you know, sharing your happiness.
Yeah.
And they are also there when you're feeling low. You may think you're alone, but you're never really alone. But if you see them, I think that that's their way of just reassuring you that they're still there. They still love you. They haven't stopped loving you. Love is one of those things that just never goes away.
Yeah. Well, do they often, when they return, do you always see them visually, or sometimes do they send a message, some kind of a verbal message, or do they speak to us directly, or do you have to have a psychic medium present?
It tends to vary. For myself, I'm not psychic. That's why I call myself a psychic bystander. I'm surrounded by people who are psychic. So I don't really get messages, but people I've spoken to, sometimes they see someone more often. They maybe smell something that, like the cologne of that person, or if that person smoked a lot, they'll smell the tobacco.
Yeah.
They may have some sort of symbol, like whenever they see something, that means that you know, maybe they're finding pennies or feathers, or maybe they're thinking of a song, and as soon as they turn on the radio, that's what's there.
Yeah.
So that song was put into their mind.
Yeah.
As a way of saying, hey, I'm here, and you're going to hear this in a minute.
there's a lot
of different ways.
A number of fascinating communications from our daughter, Kristen, like a ring of lights appeared in the bedroom one time, and often we'll see street lights flashing on and off when we pass by that, you know, they don't seem to come on and off after we leave, so I think it's not a malfunction or something, but... And then lost items have appeared from nowhere. Like one time I went over to mail a letter and looked over right after I mailed it, and there were some sunglasses that I'd been missing were right there on the seat, and I swear they hadn't been on the seat before.
Those are all very typical things, ways of them just reassuring us that they're still around.
The funniest of all was our dog Chips passed away, and about a year later we discovered some dog food on the floor under the desk that hadn't been there before. Now, I don't know that dogs are smart enough to communicate like that, so I think maybe it was.
Yeah, I mean, animals often come back after they pass.
I'll be darned.
I have an interesting story. This is like a shorter story. I have a longer one if you had the time a little bit later.
Yeah.
But this is something that happened to a woman named Carol, who's a medical auditor. And it happened when she was a child, and to this day, I mean, it just completely changed the way she looked at the world. And this story is called The Visit. Now, when children say they've seen or heard something that seems impossible, they're often scolded for lying. But what if they're telling the truth?
Yeah.
Now, when Carol was about 13, she and her sister Martha shared a bedroom. And one night when they went to bed, the shades on the two windows in their room suddenly started going up and down, all by themselves.
Wow.
Now, the windows weren't open, so there wasn't a breeze coming through.
Yeah.
Now, this didn't make much sense, but they got up really fast. They were very nervous to see the shades going up and down like that.
Yeah.
And then they heard bells ringing. And so they called for their mother. And Carol's mom came upstairs and wanted to know what all the commotion was about, like a typical mom. And no sooner had they finished telling her what they'd just experienced than the phone rang. It was her aunt, and she was calling to say that their grandfather had passed away.
Oh.
And her mother felt that what happened was that the grandfather had visited to say goodbye.
Yeah. That probably was what happened.
Yeah, I thought that was a cute little story.
Yeah.
I have a longer one, which is actually about somebody coming home for the holidays, if you have the time.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. This story is from Concetta Bertoldi, who's actually a professional psychic medium, but she was kind enough to share this one story. It's called Home for the Holidays. Now, Thanksgiving has a special significance in Concetta's family. It has always been a time of both separation and reunion.
Yeah.
Now, her mother, Eleanor, was raised in an orphanage in Irvington, New Jersey, back in the 1930s. And it was a terrible place where she was beaten and starved.
Mm.
When she was 6 years old, they put her to work in the kitchen, cooking with pots that were bigger than she was. She often got burned and there was no medical attention. Now, Eleanor's mother, Helen, was still alive, but she was an alcoholic. So her daughter and three sons were placed in an orphanage.
Yeah.
One day when Eleanor was seven, her mother, Helen, went to visit her and promised that she would take her home for Thanksgiving and give her a traditional holiday meal. Now, this was an incredibly unusual thing. So Eleanor got very excited, and for the entire day she waited at the end of the driveway at the orphanage for her mother to come. Unfortunately, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, an adult came out and told her mother had passed away. And that's how she found out her mother had died.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, her mother, Helen, had passed away at the age of 27 from cirrhosis of the liver.
Oh, wow.
Now, Concetta, that would be Helen's daughter, observes that when people are abused as children, they can react in one of two ways. Either they can pass on the abuse, or they become very compassionate and loving. And her mother, Eleanor, fortunately, took the second route.
Oh.
Eleanor grew up to be a beautiful woman with reddish blonde hair, blue eyes, and a delicate porcelain complexion befitting her Irish heritage.
Yeah.
She was married happily for 50 years and had three children, her daughter Concetta and two sons, Robert and Harold. Unfortunately, her husband and her son predeceased her. But on Thanksgiving Day in 2008, Concetta invited her mom, Eleanor, to join them at a friend's house for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Now, they talked about it the night before, and they finalized all the times, and Eleanor was very excited about it. During the night, however, Eleanor became ill, called the paramedics, and she was rushed to the hospital.
Oh.
Now, Conchetta's surviving brother was at her side when she passed. Shortly after, for the first and only time in Conchetta's life, remember, she's a psychic medium, she heard a homecoming on the other side. She heard her mother greeted like a guest of honor at a birthday party by everyone she had known and loved in her life.
Oh, wow.
And she heard her embracing other souls and laughing.
Huh.
As a professional psychic medium, Conchetta communicates with spirits on the other side every day, but this was deeply emotional and personal for her. She reflected on the irony of her mother's death that day. She says, "Can you imagine? 70 years after she had promised, my grandmother Helen finally kept her word and took my mother home for Thanksgiving."
Oh, wow. That's a wonderful story. Well, are we more likely to hear from loved ones who died tragically at a young age, say, long before their time, than from older loved ones who lived a full and natural lifespan? I know, you know, we received numerous signs from Kristen. One time, a somewhat psychic lady at a craft fair ran over to my wife and said Kristen had just told her she was fine, and the way that the psychic related was just like Kristen would talk. She giggled, said, "I'm fine," but is that more likely? We never heard from any of our parents who have passed away, and but they all lived long, full lifespans into their 90s, and you know, we're committed Christians, so we don't have any question about where they are. But is it more likely to hear from someone that, say, has unresolved issues or died suddenly?
Only if you have unresolved issues.
Oh, I see.
It's more about you than them.
Yeah,
because
that's
they're worried
good point.
About how you feel.
No, that's what I meant, that just to assure us that they're fine. Or
exactly, yeah. Because I know that my husband was very sad when his mother died. During a five-month period, she was diagnosed with leukemia and died within 5 months, and she was only 70.
Yeah.
And that was devastating because, and I have to say, she was really a lovely woman and one of those people who was the hub of the family.
Yeah.
And I know my husband was very troubled by that, and he's had several visits from her.
Oh, I see.
Primarily, I think, to reassure him.
Yeah.
I think that the primary concern on the other side is how you're feeling and if you're at peace with what happened. I think a lot of times when people are in their 80s or 90s and they had full lives and they're very happy, and you know they were very happy, there's closure. So
yeah,
there's no need for them to come back
when
my parents died,
I had no concern whatsoever because they had long lives, especially my mother, you know, lived 2 or 3 years after my father. And the last thing I said to her, "You're going to see Dad soon," and she smiled, and, you know, I knew that she was ready, so it really, I didn't need any reassurance on that part. But, well, is there anything we as a living people can do to welcome our departed loved ones over the holidays? Can we encourage them to drop in? Is there any way to do that, or is it pretty much up to them?
It's pretty much up to them, but, you know, they always appreciate if you remember them. And, you know, I remember I was at a book signing one time. I was buying somebody else's book, and that person happened to be psychic. And she said when I got online, "Oh, your father was in the military, and you have his military picture on your cell phone and on your desk at work. He thanks you for that." And I was blown away because my father was a World War II veteran, and I have his photograph that comes up on my cell phone, and it's also, it was at the time on my desk at work, so and we were very close, you know. So,
well, let's talk a bit about your latest book with a fascinating title, Sightseeing in the Undiscovered Country. What does your book encompass? Is it mostly scientific evidence or tales, or do you have some of both in there, or what?
Well, there's more than 200 stories from everyday people of things that they have experienced that they can't explain. And I also have many stories, many studies from universities and the military and other research institutions on you know, what they're finding through scientific study, which you know, that kind of satisfies both sides of me because I do science writing. But they found some pretty interesting things.
Well, what is there one message you would like a reader to take away? What would it be? I guess to keep an open mind.
Well, actually, the one thing I like to say when someone asks me what's the takeaway is that Whether you realize it or not, you could be like me and you're not very psychic, and there you, maybe you are.
Yeah.
You are surrounded by beings who love you very much.
Yeah.
Now, they may be departed loved ones, they may be guides, they may be angels, but
yeah. You
are never really alone. Even when you feel sad and you think you're alone, you're actually surrounded by love. And I think
yeah. That's
a really important thing to remember.
Well, that's a wonderful message. It certainly corresponds with the great religions of the world, which really are founded on love. And
absolutely.
I think the afterlife is defined by love. If we just realize that and not get so worked up over every little thing while we're alive. Where should we go to preview and purchase your book? Where's the best place to find it?
Well, I have a website, which is www.psychicbystander.com. And you can either go there and get information on both books. I have two in the series.
Yeah.
Or if you want to just go purchase it, you can go to Amazon.com
yeah. Or
ask your local bookstore to order it in.
Yeah, I found it both on Amazon and your website. But in conclusion, I'm certain that, like me, a lot of you are highly skeptical about the paranormal, mediums, ghosts, near-death experiences, or reincarnation. But what do we have to lose by keeping an open mind? As a former newspaper reporter and a scientific medical journalist, Louisa Oakley Green was paid to be skeptical, and her own personal experiences and those of the ones she relays in her book have changed her mind. In my mind and that of my wife, Gloria, were opened in a big way by messages from our dear departed daughter, Kristen. And it's too late this year for Christmas, but why not open your heart and mind and invite departed loved ones to visit you over the New Year's weekend? Who knows just who might show up and what message they may bring? And better yet, this week, get a hold of Louisa Oakley Green's latest book, Sightseeing in Undiscovered Country, or her prior book, Loitering at the Gate to Eternity. I like that title, too. And her book just may open your eyes to the paranormal activity all around us. And the wisest among us know that we the living, don't have all the answers. And wouldn't you love to learn how your departed loved ones are doing and maybe have a peek forward into what the future holds for you on the other side? And thank you so much, Louisa, for opening new horizons and pumping some paranormal energy into our holiday week.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
In the midst of the holiday season, are your teenagers getting on your nerves? The Christmas and New Year's holidays bring plenty of family together time, but as those of you with teenagers know, extended togetherness can be both good and bad. Have you experienced any stressful confrontations yet? Now, I know teenage sons can get on the nerves of both parents, but today we're going to talk specifically, I can't say the word, to you mothers with preteen or teenage daughters. And hey, Mom, what happened to that charming little girl who used to turn to you first for advice, listened intently, and obeyed whenever you set limits, let you braid her hair, pick out her clothes, and snuggled up oh so close to you on the couch? Did that huggable offspring start to slip away from you around age 11 or 12? And who is this sassy, defiant, standoffish creature who has taken over your little girl's body? The moody daughter who now turns everything into drama, ignores your advice, and defies you at every turn, challenging your authority to tell her anything. And if you're like so many moms, I bet interaction with your teenage daughter becomes especially tense and volatile around the holidays. You're stressed out from recent shopping, gift wrapping, cleaning house, preparing meals for out-of-town guests, not to mention year-end deadlines and unfinished projects facing you when you return to work. And after Christmas Day, your daughter remains home from school, but the joyful anticipation is over. She's probably a little bored, craving excitement, but also stressed out about pending finals projects due and semester grades. And this combination of on-edge teenage girl and stressed-out mother can turn combative fairly quickly. But here's some good news. My next guest, Colin O'Grady, is here with suggestions that can alter the dynamic and make everyone's holiday season happier. And more importantly, she's here with advice for throughout the year how to salvage and build upon your mother-daughter relationship going forward. And Colleen O'Grady is a licensed marriage and family therapist with 25 years experience in person and through her website. She offers hope, encouragement, and practical advice to moms all over the world. She's a popular speaker, life coach, and workshop leader known as a thought leader in her field. And for 19 years, she's trained psychiatrists and psychology residents in both child and adolescent departments at the University of Texas Medical School and at a county hospital. And she's author of the brand new groundbreaking book, Dial Down the Drama, Reducing Conflict, and Reconnecting with Your Teenage Daughter, A Guide for Mothers Everywhere. Great title. And hello, Colleen, and Happy New Year.
Well, that was a great introduction. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I speak from personal experience, having witnessed firsthand many confrontations between our strong-willed daughter when she was a teenager and my wife, her mom, Gloria, and I only wish we'd had your book back then.
So how old's your daughter now?
Well, she unfortunately, she passed away at 30. She was a Navy pilot and then was flying a banner over the San Diego Chargers football game, and it nosedived, and she passed away in the end of 2006. But she had a wonderful life and was a wonderful daughter when she was alive. And but anyway, we don't want to talk about sad times like that.
Okay.
In your book, you point out there's a neurological reason why teenage daughter is hardwired for drama. And what is that reason?
Well, that's a great question. And this, just mothers and actually fathers, just knowing this can help you a lot.
Yeah.
I like to say that I talk about in my book that there's four reasons that your daughter's hardwired for drama.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting. Some of the brain scientists will argue about one, but I think any mother or daughter will know it's true, which is the hormones actually do play a factor. And they do get worse during that certain time of the month. And it's because the cycle has not, smoothed out. So it's really erratic, which produces really huge mood drops.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, anybody who's lived with a daughter can kind of know that's true.
Yeah.
So you add that to... that it's an interesting time of the teenager. There's good news and bad news. I mean, the good news is that her brain is being remodeled.
Oh.
So just like a home, that the final product is going to be really great. That's kind of like the teenage brain. So so from early adolescence, which actually starts around 9, till what they say 25, it's like you're going to be seeing each room of the house getting better and better. So that's the good news.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, what the deal is, I think right now it's kind of a buzzword that they say that the prefrontal cortex is undeveloped until the age of 25.
Oh, I'll be darned. Yeah, I know our daughter and her mother got to get along much better after she turned about 25.
yeah. And the thing is people don't know exactly what that means. So here's what it means, is the prefrontal cortex really helps you think through consequences.
Oh.
Yeah. And so it helps you think about cause and effect.
Yeah. Rational process.
And it helps you control your emotional reactions.
Yeah.
So, and you can see that when that's not like a faulty wire, you're going to have a girl that's impulsive, makes decisions that are not thought through.
Yeah.
And you're kind of saying, what were you thinking?
She doesn't want to hear you say that either.
Right. So the kind of the not well the bad news is, or I just say this is why it's not personal, is what I tell a lot of moms.
Because
moms can feel like, oh my gosh. But if the higher brain, the cortex, is undeveloped, the more reactionary part of the brain is fully developed.
Oh, great.
So the part that can sass off to you and lose the temper or slam doors or run into the room.
The old fight or flight portion of the brain, you're saying.
Yes, yes, exactly. So the fight is when the daughter can say, "I hate you, Mom."
Yeah.
Now let me. Now, for the moms who are listening, here's some really good news.
Yeah.
"I hate you, Mom" doesn't really mean that she hates you. It means that she's really, really mad at you because you did not buy her, like, you know, a new something.
Or let her stay out until 3 a.m. with her boyfriend.
Absolutely. That's what that really means.
Yeah.
So the mother's like, "Oh, my gosh, how can my daughter hate me?" So if she knows that's not what she really means,
yeah,
it's just, "I'm really, really mad at you, you know, that I can't see my boyfriend, like you said, at 3 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to treat your daughter, when you think about it, as a unfinished business rather than a fully developed person that, you know, you're still working on. But I know it's comforting to know there's a logical explanation for the confrontational behavior, but that doesn't make it any more pleasant. And do you have any suggestions on how mom can react when a teenage daughter confronts her, ignores requests, sulks, screams, then sulks, and deflates the holiday spirit for the whole family? What are some suggestions of how we can tone down the drama?
Well, yes. So I think everybody can tell that, you know, you've been there. You understand. So what I would say is just simply, and then I'll kind of put it in the holidays.
Yeah.
I kind of joke, and I mean, this is not, you know, something that you want to take me to the bank for scientifically, but it's because it's really, really simplistic. But I kind of joke with the moms that I coach is like, you can tell when your daughter is kind of relaxed in herself.
Yeah.
And then I call it limbic girl.
Ooh.
So the lower brain, like the stress response brain, you know when limbic girl is showing up because it's obvious.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's the deal. When you're emotionally flooded and you're in stress response and in the lower brain, you cannot access any kind of reason or perspective. For any of us, but especially a teenager.
Yeah.
So the words of advice is when she's all riled up, don't tangle with it.
Yeah, that screaming back at her really is not going to solve anything, I know.
Right, and I could see your daughter, I have mothers cracking up, because in my book I name all the tactics.
Oh.
But your daughter has like an arsenal of tactics if you start to get into it.
Yeah.
Like what I call adolescent logic, which is equals not logical. So it goes like this, and this is what drives mothers crazy, you know, it's, or dads, you know, is, you know, "Mom, can I go to the party where John's fraternity, you know, brothers are going to be, you know, supervising it?"
Yeah.
And you say, "No, that's not acceptable." And then she says, "Do you just hate me? Do you just want to ruin my life?"
Yeah, all my friends are going. You're ruining my life.
All my friends are going. Like, what's wrong with you? Is it because you're such a loser? So,
exactly.
So that stuff, you completely ignore. And when you know it's a tactic, then you can kind of go, we're done. And so your clarity really helps. So your clarity is like, I'm really clear. You know, we're done. You're not going to the party.
Yeah, you don't have to get into a long, extended defense of your position.
Right. And then I think because, you know, mothers, because we're emotional creatures, the first place that sometimes it's really to advantage to be a male raising a teenage daughter. But because we're emotional creatures, we go, and this feels like the right thing for a mom, but it just doesn't work. It's like, "Don't you know how that makes me feel?"
Oh, yeah, like, that's the last thing. you know, then you transfer it to you rather than, you know, your daughter's welfare. Don't you know how that makes me feel? And that's probably the worst thing you can possibly say at that
but
point.
Yeah, because, you know, I was up all night. I was worried to death. Yeah. I mean, don't you even care about how I feel?
Yeah, that's exactly probably what you shouldn't say, I guess.
Yeah, no. It's you know, that's what you tell your spouse. That's what you tell your friends. That's what you tell a coach or a therapist.
Yeah.
But your daughter doesn't really care.
No. Because
what adolescent logic really means is she wants what she wants.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, the positive side of so simply is when you can recognize her tactics, when you can when you see that she's okay, that's limbic girl. We're just going to kind of contain the situation.
Yeah.
Then and what I throw in for moms in there, which is also really applies to the holidays too.
Yeah.
Is you need to take extreme self-care for yourself.
Yeah.
Because, like you said so beautifully in your intro, is mom's workload kind of doubles in the holiday, and so we're exhausted.
Yeah.
So then it doesn't take much for us to blow a gasket, because...
Yeah.
No, if she gives you that eye roll and like whatever, and especially right after Christmas, after you've spent all this money on gifts, and you like, and what do we expect? It's like,
where's the gratitude?
Gratitude, and she's going to be so thoughtful. She's going to say, you know, Mom and Dad, can I help out in the house? I would like to hang out with y'all the rest of the week because y'all have been kind to me. Let's play board games.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's not going to say that.
No.
And that's sure. When we get really, there's this kind of quid pro quo thing that we, you know, we assume, and it's just that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, how should Mom and Dad react when a defiant teen daughter disrupts a planned prearranged family holiday event? Say we're supposed to go to dinner at Aunt Betty's and Uncle Mike's, and suddenly your daughter says, well, I'm not going, you know, and just refuses. And how do you react then? Do you make her go, or do you just say, okay, that's your choice. You can fend for yourself for dinner. How do you react in a situation?
Yeah, that's a great question. Okay, so now we're going to get into what we can do. So what I would say is your clarity is your friend.
Yeah.
And also... you want to have a strategy. You don't want to kind of go and just, let's just see what happens this holiday.
Yeah.
What you want to do is kind of go back and review last year. Like, what happened?
Totally.
Did she, you know?
Yeah.
Because she probably pulled some of that same stuff last year.
Yeah.
So then you don't have to be surprised, because she will probably do the same thing. So what you want to do is be way before... you know, it's, you know, Christmas Eve or whatever, you know, holiday tradition you have. You want to say, okay, here's the deal. It's really important that you go to Aunt Betty's, and this is what we do as a family.
Yeah.
And I know you may not be happy about it, but here's the deal. Like, then you could kind of barter.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and
give
say,
her something in return for... Well, I don't mean you want to obviously bribe her or anything like that, but I see what you're saying there. In terms of...
Well, yeah, anything that kind of reflects normal life, you know, because it's like, I know you're giving something to me, so what I'll do is I'll drive you and your friends to the mall. You know, that takes about 3 hours, and I'll drive your friends to the mall and run around and you know, whatever you need to do.
Yeah, that's great. You make those kind of agreements in advance. And then, obviously, if your daughter then refuses to go to Aunt Betty's, maybe you find something that comes up that you can't take her to the mall. I would assume that, you know, you'd leave the choice to her, but you'd see she'd have consequences by defying the agreement she made in advance.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the reason for that is, again, it's high brain, low brain stuff. So my book really is really foundational of understanding the brain, because at the last second, you got limbic girl.
I love that, limbic girl.
And she's not reasonable. She's like, because her boyfriend's just texted her and said, can we hang out at the park? And she's like, no effing way am I going to go. I've got to see my boyfriend. So another proactive, I'm all about proactive strategies.
Yeah.
Because she's all reactive, then we need to be proactive. So a proactive strategy, and this is really one of the core truths of my philosophy in my book, is you want to build small chunks of time of connection every single day. So small for the large long term.
Well, you know, that's a great idea or suggestion. Instead of forcing yourself into your daughter's life, and you know, she'll obviously consider you prying and overbearing. You have those little small chunks of time that, you maintain like a casual, not a real formal conversation, but just you know, casually spend those blocks of time getting to know what's going on and that kind of stuff. I can see what you're saying there. That sounds great. But
I like to say that a teenage girl is like a cat. And she's...
Her claws certainly are.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and just like, you know, you can, like with a dog, you can say, hey, you know, hey, Susie, come here, girl, come here.
Yeah.
And she'll run on over to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, the cat will just bolt. So you kind of... So what you kind of do is, so you look for times where kind of the cat's kind of approaching you, and then you kind of, you know, there's your 20 minutes. So she kind of says, oh, Dad, or oh, Mom, you know, look at this. Aren't these cute? Or look at this stupid cat video. Or or you say, hey, let's run out and, you know, get a cup of coffee, or let's just go get frozen yogurt, or... And small sound bites. So, and a key about that time, it's when she's relaxed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, when limbic girl isn't around.
Yeah, limbic girl's gone. When she's relaxed. And, you know, sometimes this is an inconvenient time, you know, for us as parents, because it's like, you know, 10 o'clock at night, I'm trying to finish up something for work, and my daughter plopped on the bed. He goes, hey, Mom. And I'm like, oh, gosh, seriously? No. But I close the computer.
Yeah,
and
no, that's so key. You have to show that, you know, when she does approach you, that you're definitely interested and that you're not tuning her out as like the 10th priority of what you have to do.
Yes. And here, I call these spontaneous conversations, because we're not forcing them. They're just spontaneous. And I had a good point. So, and so in those conversations, here's the benefit of them. Because, well, here's a fear for parents. You're like, oh, my gosh, this is, I'll never get my work done. This is going to go on and on forever. But they have, you know, they have short attention spans. So 20 to 30 minutes, they're gone.
Yeah, that's true. That's the good news. It's not going to take a lot of your time.
It's not going to be forever. And another benefit of these spontaneous conversations is you kind of have to wade through the cat video.
Yeah.
But oftentimes on the other side of the cat video, she starts talking.
Yeah.
And she'll tell you way more in those moments than you would, like, you know, on the ride home from school, and you say, you know, what happened at school? What did you do? Blah, blah, blah. And that's when you get the one-word answers.
Yeah. In my book, I point out something like, how are things going? I'm fine. You know, and then you know, these one sentence answers because they just want to get rid of the old lady or the old man and get on with her.
Right. And but here's the cool thing for parents is they really do. I mean, they don't want to hang out with you in front of their friends.
No, ours.
But they do want connection with you.
Yeah.
And they want, like, if you think about this, the home, when you take out the drama, can be the safe place for the teen because school is the battlefield.
Yeah.
And, you know, for grades, for popularity, for belonging. And so if the kids can come home and they can, you know, just rattle on and on.
Yeah, that's
and
good
feel
point.
Safe, it's they need that.
Yeah, you have to be the anchor that they can come back to, and an anchor doesn't really reach out to the person. The person or the ship reaches out to the anchor, so that but you're there when your teenager wants, and that spontaneous conversation is a great idea. And of course, you always need to demonstrate your unfailing love. You may disagree with the behavior, but you love the person, and all those things I think go into it. But let's talk a bit about your new book, Dial Down the Drama: Reducing Drama and Connecting with Your Teenage Daughter. How is it organized? Your book. How, if someone was reading it, where would they start? And organized?
Well, it's there are three sections. And the first section is helping mom regain a new perspective on parenting and really and her life.
Yeah.
Because what I like to say is that there are these powerless parenting messages that, like, it's selfish to pay attention to me.
Yeah.
And moms can then just not be really good at taking care of themselves. And then no one wins.
Yeah, you point out this mother who had this charming little daughter all fixed up, but she was a mess with her face.
Yes.
The mascara dripping down. But the daughter, the little baby daughter, the young daughter was so beautiful the way she's been fixed up. I thought that was
yes. Fun. Yes, that's the mom phenomenon is what I talk about, which is when my daughter was little.
Yeah.
My daughter looked perfect in her little pink outfit and her little bow in her hair.
Yeah.
And when I walked to the grocery store, people looked at my daughter and said, "Oh my gosh, she's so cute," and they look at me and just stare. And then I got in the car and I looked in the mirror and I had like mascara like all the way down my face.
Yeah, you know, it's so important that really we have to have self-confidence, or you ladies have to have confidence in yourself. And once you're confident in yourself and, you know, you really feel good about your relationship with your daughter, then you're not going to let the occasional drama and other things disrupt that relationship, and you're not going to feel threatened when your daughter does demonstrate a normal teenage behavior. I think that's great the way that book presents it. Where would we go to preview and purchase your book? What's the best way to do that?
Okay. Let me just briefly say after mom, you know, gets her energy back, which is a win for mom, is like actually taking care of you.
Yeah.
It's like a win-win.
Yeah.
Then I go into how to rebuild your connection with your daughter and looking at, you know, how to like your daughter again, why your daughter is hardwired for drama, and how moms become drama mamas, and how do you really discipline a teenage girl? And then I go into how to create a new future for you and your daughter. And a big thing is what your daughter needs to thrive, because a lot of argument, and how to be your daughter's dream maker.
Yeah.
Because a lot of our arguments are really about our future.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
and it's not for us to determine what our sons and daughters' future is. I mean, we've raised them up to a certain level now. It's really up to them how they want to what they want to do as an adult. But
Yeah, it's confusing because you have society's dream, our dream, and their dream, and,
yeah.
You know, a lot of times they clash.
But anyway, where should you go to preview your book? Because it sounds like a definite positive resource for mothers and, for that matter, fathers to have at this point in their
daughter's
life.
Well, you can definitely order it on Amazon or find it in Barnes & Noble or order it in Barnes & Noble. But you could also get, I have a free chapter for y'all.
Oh.
And you could, so you could go straight to ColleenOGrady.com. And that's ColleenOGrady.com.
Yeah,
and,
you have a lot of resources on there at I know that you do offer that free chapter, and we all love freebies.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Yeah, so so that's ColleenOGrady.com is where they should go then.
Colleen with two E's.
Yeah, and I notice you have a lot of resources that, you know, some blogs and other things on there that useful advice for parenting. So that's a great website to check out. And in conclusion, like Colleen O'Grady, I experienced raising a teenage daughter. As I mentioned before, I witnessed years of drama and confrontation between our daughter Kristen and her mother and my wife Gloria. But here's a bit of encouraging news. Our daughter gave her mom lots of sleepless nights and a few gray hairs, but she turned out as a great adult, was a naval pilot, and was really a great honor to both my wife and I. Unfortunately, obviously, she passed away doing what she loved doing, and that's flying. But once in her 20s, Kristen and her mom again became the closest of companions. So get hold of Colleen O'Grady's book, Calm Down and Hang in There. The reward is wonderful, and believe it or not, your daughter does love you. And thank you so much, Colleen, for giving us that message today and joining us.
You're so welcome. I enjoyed it.
Well, that's it for today. And next week, tune in and learn why you should be optimistic as we start a new year. We'll see you then for Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.